I am here in studio right now with Congressman Joe Kennedy, hoping to be your next senator from Massachusetts. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Christine, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I was looking at your schedule. We get your list every day of all the stops that you make. A, you're on time, which was good. Didn't look like you were speeding, and I'm so glad you made some time here for us, for the listeners here on the South Shore. What's it been like on the last couple of weeks in the campaign trail? You came here at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, the beginning of March, full of energy. You're still full of energy. What are you seeing out in the street and with people?
First off, just thanks for having me. It's great to be back and appreciate the opportunity. One, it's nice to be able to kind of resume some semblance of campaigning, the type of campaigning that I always believe that campaigns are about, right? And that's a lot of face-to-face, that's a lot of fist bumps and high fives and hugs and handshakes and normally diners and coffee shops and living rooms, and we haven't been able to do that. But we're able to do a little bit more of it now than we obviously were for months. And so getting back out and just having that connection with people is, I think, so critical to this job. It's critical for me because I don't think that you can really hone the questions as to what this moment calls for and what we need to do as a nation and certainly as a member of Congress or as a senator without having that connection. And so being out and about has been critically important to me. And we've been out and about. It's an aggressive schedule, as it should be. We did 27 straight hours last week from about left my home in Greater Boston about 3 in the morning and got back at about 7 a.m. the next day. Getting out to meet as many people as we can. And the one thing I'd say that the issue that comes up now more than anything else is schools and questions that parents have about whether the school is going to open up, what they should do with their kids. If it's not opening, how do you educate your children? Mm-hmm. How do you go to work? How do you pay a mortgage or pay your rent? People are really concerned.
Do you find them, are they telling you, I think it should be open, I think it should be closed, I think it should be a hybrid? Are they telling you that, or are they asking for your opinion?
A bit of a mix. I think there's a lot of confusion still, Christine, because you see inconsistencies, obviously, across around the country, yes, but also across the state. And you have, I've got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old. You have families wonder why your school district might be doing a hybrid. Somebody else's is bringing everybody back. Mm-hmm. Somebody else's is all remote. And you kind of turn around and go, well, what's different about your circumstance that leads to a different series of choices or a different choice than mine? And the concerns that I think everybody has, which is one, you obviously want your kids to get educated, and they need to go to school. Our little ones are very young. They need that social and emotional learning. They need that contact with other children. But you certainly don't want to compromise their health and safety. And so how do those pieces come together? Make sure you don't want to compromise the health and safety of teachers or bring a disease home. And looking for guidance from folks that oftentimes don't have guidance because the federal government hasn't given the resources that's needed to actually fully delineate what these plans need to be in order to take care of everybody.
And speaking of the federal government, I know here in Massachusetts, it seems like we're just waiting to see what kind of aid, how much we're going to get from the federal government so people can know what's going to be in store when it comes to budgeting for their cities and towns, for the states, other people waiting for grants, et cetera. It's a very tenuous situation because people just don't know what to advocate for because they don't know what kind of a pot there is. What are you feeling? What are you hearing about that? Are people as worried about that as we hear in the newsroom?
Absolutely. And look, I think the word of this time is uncertainty, right? And the anxiety that comes with it. Look, it's one thing. The state government here, our state budget shortfall is about $7 billion, which is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's about 15-18% of the state budget. 40% of our state budget is healthcare, Medicaid. 20% is education. I think for some good reasons, you don't want to cut healthcare in the midst of a pandemic, mm-hmm. and you don't want to cut education because you don't want to take the pandemic and the economic shortfall out on our kids. But it means that you then got to make up the rest of that shortfall in whatever in the 40% or so that's remaining, which is next to impossible. If the federal government were to say, hey, look, of that $7 billion shortfall, here's three, here's four, here's mm-hmm. two, it at least allows our cities and towns and government to be able to plan about, okay, how do we put those pieces together? By not giving us that clarity or certainty, it just leads to myriad more questions for folks to try to juggle without knowing what's coming. And understand that we, out of the House, had passed $1 trillion allocation for money for states and municipalities to be able to get additional assistance, plus $150 billion more for schools, directly for schools. That number we're trying to plus up now, given the circumstances. People need relief, and they need some clarity and certainty here so that we can get through this and as quickly as we can. And that relief still hasn't come from the Senate.
We were talking a little bit off air, and I was talking about, you know, questions reporters ask you because, you know, we think we know everything. Well, occasionally. But a lot of times the questions that we're asking are not the questions that the everyday people are asking you on the street. Now, obviously, they're talking about schools. What are the things that they ask you about or want to tell you about when you meet them in public?
People are asking... The big one now, obviously, is schools. They want to know why things aren't working well in Washington. They want answers for polarization. And I think what they're looking for more than the immediate question of what do I do with my kids in school, but I think underlying that, Christine, is also the, do you understand what's going on in my life? Do you understand the anxiety that I have about and how real this choice is and this uncertainty is about educating my children versus trying to pay a mortgage? Do you understand what we have been through? Not just the economic devastation over the past couple months, but the anxiety that comes down on a marriage, mm-hmm. on the relationships within a household. Looking around for help or assistance because of such a traumatic time, 100,000 people sick in Massachusetts, over 8,000 people have died, this enormous trauma, and look for help for our government and see this dysfunction in Washington, and they want more, right? They want answers, and they want accountability, and they want somebody that's going to be there that's not going to settle for attacks and slogans, but is actually going to work for them and try to find their way through it.
What kind of a Democrat would you describe yourself as?
I'd say a an idealist, but a pragmatic one. And look, I say on that, you look at my record and you look at the values that I hold, I have no problem dreaming big, whether that's on healthcare or on education or on climate or on racial justice. I also have spent a lot of time in Congress meeting with people that are suffering and struggling, whether those are business owners at the moment that are hanging on literally by a thread, whether it's somebody suffering from mental illness that's living literally in a homeless camp off of Route 2, whether it's people that are struggling with mental illness. And I might have my ideal conception as to what that solution, legislative solution, looks like. I don't think you can turn around and tell somebody, hey, just hold on till hopefully January, where we have a Democratic House, Senate, and presidency, and then I'll be able to give you that solution. They're looking for assistance with their kids now. Telling somebody to hold on for 4 or 5 months or another year or 2 years, 4 years, how can you do that? So you work as hard as you can to address the needs of the people that you're serving.
If you get elected to office, if you get two things done while you're there, what do you want people to know that those two things would be?
I want people to know that two things would be fighting for their basic dignity every single day, that everybody in this country is worthy and everybody counts. And we're going to set forth a series of policies around you to make sure that this government recognizes that. And I think a central piece of that is our healthcare system. And Christine, one of my major areas of focus there, as I mentioned, has been on mental health and addiction. We still, to this day, do not treat mental health care the way we treat regular old health care, physical health care. The largest providers of mental health in our country are the jails in Los Angeles and Chicago. You see this every day in our criminal justice system, where we lock people up that are sick, that are suffering from addiction, that are suffering from mental illness, that because we don't have robust areas of care, people fall through these cracks. And where do they fall through? They fall into jail. But about 20% of the American public will suffer from a mental behavioral challenge at some point in their life. That's almost one in every family. And yet we still are unwilling to make that commitment. And it's worse for, obviously, the gap of care there is worse for kids, it's worse for minorities, it's worse for immigrants. We need to do far better. And that's been a major area of focus of mine.
You know, it's interesting. A homicide detective once said to me, everybody counts or nobody counts. Yeah. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I do. And I think we're seeing that play out today, where you have an awful lot of questions of saying the way in which the inequities that we are seeing across our society, whether it's economic or in healthcare disparities or in racial justice, and the devaluation that we continue to see across our society. And again, sharing once again this week with a young dad shot 7 times in the back in front of his children who will never walk again. This country is capable of so much more and of so much better. But that change is hard. If it were easy, it would have been done by now. We've been at this for 400 years. Let's work at it, though.
So do you think that there's a way that you can have, and I don't know if they are really even opposed to each other, but how can we have the movement Black Lives Matter and also supporting police? Can you think that they are necessarily going at each other, or do you think they can be harmonious and they can find some common ground?
I think this country's about trying to wrestle with tensions like this and trying to find that area of common ground. And how I look at this, Christine, is to say, look, I think we've seen far too many examples, obviously, over the course of, well, of course, of our history, but the course of the last several months, to say that this is not a systemic problem, right? We've seen it in Wisconsin, we've seen it in Minnesota. The only case of police abuse that the Trump administration kept over from the Obama administration was in Springfield, Massachusetts, the only one. So when folks say, hey, this doesn't happen here, it doesn't happen in Massachusetts, it happens everywhere. It doesn't mean that there aren't people out there that are putting themselves in harm's way every day for all of us. Of course, that's true. But it does mean that there's major systemic inequities and injustices that we as a society have to root out and have to change. And I think there's, the example that I led with a moment ago on mental health is, I think, a great example of saying, look, you talk to the sheriffs in our state, they'll tell you that between 80 and 90% of incarcerated individuals on any given night are suffering with substance use disorder or mental illness. You want to address an overcrowding of a prison population, let's actually treat people that are sick like they're sick. Let's get people the care that they need. Let's focus on early intervention and treatment and prevention. Let's not ask police officers to respond to an incident when somebody's disassociated. Let's not look at the person that is homeless in a park and clearly suffering from a mental episode as a time where you should have somebody with a badge and a gun come up and try to, might not have the requisite training, try to, address that concern. That is not a recipe for success for anyone.
What we do a lot here when we have political forums, and we usually run about probably 20 of them a year, my favorite part is the lightning round.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'm not going to ask you, spell chrysanthemum, anything like that.
Thank you.
But if you had to describe yourself, 2 or 3 sentences tops, tell me, and don't be shy, why should somebody vote for you? And give me 3 sentences.
Because I believe in this country and in our communities, and I think that we are capable of so much more. I don't think that change is inevitable, and I think you've got to go fight for it, and I think a United States senator can fight for it, but you've got to give us everything you got, and I don't think the current one is, and I promise you that I will.
Okay. Now give me a fun fact to know and tell about yourself that you've never told anybody in the media before. It's okay.
Right.
You can just
I'm
tell me
the radio
right now.
Right now.
Okay. Are you like a champion skateboarder or anything like that?
I was a champion nothing, unfortunately. I was a goalie on a lacrosse team. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I've got a twin brother and a rescue dog named Banjo. So there's 4 somewhat interesting facts.
Okay, that's pretty cool. If people want to find out more about your candidacy, website and Facebook page.
Website is Kennedy. forma.com, and Facebook page, if you just Google Joe Kennedy and Facebook, it'll pop right up, and we'd love to have you check it out. Elections on Tuesday, and I'd love to have your support.
That is terrific. And again, that's Congressman Joe Kennedy. He wants to be your next U.S. Senator. Primary election is here September 1st. Tune into WATD. We're live on the air from 8 to 10. We'll be bringing you all the results for all the local races and, of course, the primary race for the Democrats for the U.S. Senate. Appreciate you joining us today so much.
Christine, thank you.
Thank you very much.